Hello, beautiful people. My guest today is Chase Chuning, and Chase is a soldier turned health and fitness entrepreneur turned full-time podcaster. His podcast, Ever Forward Radio, has over 1.7 million downloads. But in this conversation, we didn't talk so much about podcasting or really health and fitness either. We talked more about the transformational power of psychedelics and how Chase's life personally has been transformed because of it, how he was able to look at deep-rooted issues and traumas within himself to become a higher version of himself. And so I really admired the way Chase was open, vulnerable, honest, able to share his truth in the most authentic way possible. And I'm grateful for that. So let's get right into the episode with Chase Chuning.
Interesting people, thought-provoking conversations, nutrition for your brain. Journey through the minds of the world's top performers and discover what it really takes to achieve your highest version. This is the Danny Miranda Podcast.
Chase, welcome to the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure for you to be here. I'm grateful for our mutual friend Doug for introducing us and excited for our conversation today.
Absolutely. Danny, it's my pleasure to be here. And Doug is a great new friend, new homie for the year for sure. Really enjoyed our conversation. And no doubt I will this one too, man. So I appreciate you.
Yeah. So before we press record, we started talking about your new psilocybin protocol. And I'm curious if you could just break that down for us, how you got into psilocybin in the first place and what that protocol is actually like.
So how I got started was, you know, it's one of those things that I think in life, it just kind of is like dancing around you for a while and it's on your radar, so to speak. And it just, it's interesting. It's appealing. We get curious about certain things. And it definitely did that for me for the last probably, I say like 2 years, but I didn't actually get going and using any form of psychedelic until just barely over a year ago. It was like the thick of lockdowns here in LA. It was late summer, early fall 2020. And my first experience with psychedelics was not with psilocybin, it was with MDMA. But about maybe a month later, I was using psilocybin for the first time. And let me backtrack just a little bit. And I'll say, besides being on my radar and piquing my curiosity for a while, I had like this innate kind of sensation, this gut feeling that I really wanted to try psilocybin. For kind of like two reasons. One, I've been using functional mushrooms as part of my daily wellness supplementation and nutrition for years, 5, 6, 7 years now probably, and love them. Truly amazing benefits with them for so many different reasons. And then I was just like, well, you know, if they're giving me these kind of results, you know, let me tap into maybe a different type and kind of go down that rabbit hole a little bit. But the second part was I kind of like true to my nature in anything that I do in my life, I'm like a witnesser, bystander, you know, person on the sidelines. And then I like to dive deep into conversation with people that are, you know, it could be anything. You train this way and I'm curious about it. You do your business that way and I'm interested in how you stay so productive. You know, I'm just a very curious person in nature, and especially when it comes to anything that, you know, comes to my, you know, what I'm putting into my body. I like to talk to the people that are using it. I like to research it. I like to look at the science, you know, clinical and anecdotal evidence, and then just kind of prepare myself. That's just who I am as a person and my formal training as well. And so those two reasons were really what kind of got me ready. And then honestly, Danny, it was COVID. It was just like the stress of the world at the time. It was the stress of life and business and day-to-day living that just had me, I don't want to paint a picture and say, like, you know, had me down or like backed into a corner, but I mean, you know, everybody listening knows last year, 2020 was radically different in a lot of different ways for so many of us. And I just felt like now is a great time. Now I feel like is the time to kind of step out into the unknown a little bit, to get out of my comfort zone, because just, you know, everything else was just so different. Like, why not get different along with it?
What was your intention with all this?
Really good question. A really important question. My intention with psilocybin in particular was to, I'm kind of laughing to myself out loud. My intention going into the first time was, I want to have the experience. I hear that this is going to give you this kind of, you know, interstellar, transcendental, you know, out of mind, out of body, wild experience. And that was absolutely not the case whatsoever. It was like everything that I was expecting it to be, but yet nothing I was expecting it to be. And I started small, you know, true to form. Like I said earlier, I study everything for a while, and then I, you know, source correctly, and I want to know where it's coming from and the dose and all that stuff. And I started very small. So I guess you would say my 35th birthday, actually, I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I thought, wow, this is gonna be the perfect place to try this for the first time. I always hear everybody say, get out in nature. It's gonna be great in nature. Just, you know, get out there and do your thing and let the medicine kind of do its thing. And I was sitting in this natural hot spring in literally the middle of nowhere and just the mountains, the foot of these mountains in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And I took my dose, which I now know was probably, I would say, slightly above a microdose. So it was maybe like 0.2 grams. And then throughout that afternoon and into the evening, I probably worked my way up to a total of, I would say, 2 grams. So 2 grams total over about, I'd say, 5-7 hours, you know, maybe even 8 hours. And I didn't think that I had any kind of sensation, any experience whatsoever at all during, because I was, you know, I was just in a really good mood. I was super happy. I was with my best friends. I was in this beautiful place on earth. I had been, you know, just, we had been hiking. I've been doing all these things that got me kind of naturally high, you know, out in the sunshine, endorphins, community, love. I had a few drinks. So I was like, had a nice little buzz going. I had a really good buzz going. And then I remember just thinking back after the fact of just like, Chase, there was something different there. There was this sensation of love that I had never experienced before. I'm in love. I've been in love, you know, love for a significant other, an intimate partner, my dog, my family, my coffee. And we all know what love feels like, that kind of traditional love, but this was totally different. And I remember, I didn't recognize it at the time, but I remember just kind of looking at my environment and I was like, wow, like look at where I am. Like literally look at where I am. Look at these people that I am with. And I was just, it was just this wave of love, this visceral love that I again, didn't credit or didn't even realize at the time, but I looked back and I was like, oh, that's what that was. That was psilocybin. That was just this total mind, body, head to toe state of elation and connection. And I was like, okay, cool. So that was my first experience, man.
So how do you then take that and say to yourself, okay, I'm just going to do this every day, right? Like you look at that feeling of elation and love and you're like, wow, like why don't you do it every day?
That's a really good question too. And that's one that I've seen pop up more in my personal studies of psychedelics. And for me, and I think for a lot of other people, it's so profound and so euphoric and so good and elated and amazing and all the things, but it's almost at the same time this equal level of respect for that, I don't even really like to use the word substance, that element, you know, especially with psilocybin, you know, this naturally occurring thing from Mother Nature. It's been totally different for me. I mean, I've definitely gone through my phase as a young buck and drinking too much and just, you know, I would even say at some points, you know, abusing alcohol. And it was just, wow, well, let's just get, you know, fucked up every day. Let's just get drunk. Let's, you know, I'm bored. Let's go get wild. Let's go pregame. And it would be like every day. And with this stuff, it was totally different. It was just, it would tell me when it was time. to a certain degree. I'll be totally honest, in the beginning, there was a little bit of that novelty of, whoa. And it wasn't an everyday thing. I mean, because I can't function like that every day. Not at that level. I mean, I do microdose now on a daily basis, but we'll say, I'm sure we'll get into that. And so it was just like this respect thing, I guess, to really answer that question. It was this recognition of this amazing new feeling and experience, but just respecting that experience all at the same time and kind of just knowing that there's a time and there's a place.
How did the experience as a whole give you more information about the previous decisions you had made in your life?
By just slapping me in the face with them, by just putting me directly in front of past experiences, of my, air quote here, my demons, of my traumas, of good experiences, the good, the bad, and the ugly. It just has a unique way of cutting through the bullshit, of taking us to the point in time, to the memory, to the smell, the feeling, the touch, the everything that we may or may not even know is there, or we do and have just been kind of ignoring it. I mean, so many people say it's, you know, the ego killer, right? Psychedelics, you know, you have an ego death and it just allows you to finally get out of your own way. And, you know, I say that in, it's not like the ego is a bad thing. We're never going to escape it. And it's just, it's, again, it's a respect thing. You know, ego is there for protection, is my understanding, my experience first and foremost, but it does so sometimes in a way that we don't even realize. And it's to save face sometimes, but other times it's to guard us from traumatic experiences and to guard us from things that we didn't have maybe the tools to really process at the time. And so like, oh, well then we'll just never get to it. We don't need to get to it kind of thing. But psilocybin, man, it has brought me directly face to face with so many of these things. And it's just like, say, hey, here we are, ready or not, we're going to deal with this. And it has done this for me personally in a way that initially is a little scary. And it's like, whoa, okay, I guess we're going there. Here we go. But then also like that ego separation a bit, it helps me. It has helped me, continues to help me detach from all of that initial friction and initial hesitation and initial fear and emotion that might be safeguarding me from actually getting to do the work and the healing that in my heart of hearts I want to have happen. So, I mean, it's like the personal escort to the party that you kind of think in the back of your head you want to go to, but you're too scared to always ask for. And it's your personal escort to the front of that line, man.
And when you say work, what exactly does that mean in this context?
For me, and in this context, it means going back to instances in my life that I thought I had worked through in terms of significant life events, traumas, death, injury, and just being like, hey, no, actually, here's some things that you left behind. Here's some things that you left undone, unfinished, unaddressed. And also, man, in some cases, like just things that I didn't even know I had kind of sitting in the back of my mind, or just jumping me to straight to the end of the line again of just like questions that I've been kind of dancing around for years and helping me just solve them immediately. It's, hey, here's the thing that you need to focus and address that you didn't know was there, or here's what you left behind that you need to go back and finish.
Yeah. So it's really interesting hearing you say this, because I had a very similar experience. But for me, what I did was I did this protocol of 60-minute meditations for 60 days straight. And when I compared it to some of my friends who had done psilocybin, and it was incredibly similar, because I was forced to confront a lot of these issues that I had myself and I would say to myself, that's still in the back of my head. I can't believe that. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And one of those situations was when I got pushed into a locker when I was in 12th grade and like just manhandled, and how I looked at how that impacted a lot of my future decisions and how I held on to that and held on to the anger for that person. But it was only until I did this meditation did it really come back. And did I really notice, wow, I've been holding on to this for a long time. Why? What's going on there? So I'm curious for you, what was something you had to look at and that you realized you were holding on to for a long time, if that is the case for you, and how did you work through that?
Yeah, I'll say what I would call probably my first trip. Because when I would microdose or take a, you know, whether that's literally through a microdose protocol or just take a small amount of psilocybin recreationally. And even for me to say the word recreationally, I feel is a little unfulfilled. Recreational for me always has intention with it. It's just depending on, you know, environment, I guess. But anyways, what happened for me on kind of one of my first trips, I was about 2 grams in a much shorter period of time than my first one. So it kind of, you know, that, hey, Chase, we're going to the front of this line kind of thing happened pretty quickly. And
are you alone?
For me, no, actually, I was going to say I was with a group of friends. I was with probably like 5-6 of my friends, very close community, very close friends of mine. We were just out in a backyard around a little fire pit, just shooting the shit, having a good time, and just relaxing, nothing crazy at all. And something came up on the topic of, like, look at what we're doing. Like, our parents would never, or most of our parents, I think one person was like, oh, my parents were definitely hippies in the 60s. They were doing this kind of stuff. But they're just like, you know, like, we can never explain this to them. Or even if we tried, you know, how could we tell them, like, yeah, mom, like, I'm doing drugs with my friends, you know, in the backyard of in LA. And they'd be like, oh, it's all my worst fears come true. We were kind of joking, but it just hit me because I'm missing one of my parents. My father passed away when I was 19 years old, and it's been about 17 years now. And so much of what I have done since then has been in pursuit of his legacy, continuing his legacy, and just kind of carrying on that torch, so to speak. And a question that I've never had answered, that I never could get answered, was, is he proud of me? Would he like the stuff that I'm doing? Like, what would he even care about it? You know, like, does he understand social media? Would he understand, you know, me leaving my corporate job and all of those conversations that I would have had with my father that so many of us do have with our parent or parents about major life decisions, whether or not we're seeking actual guidance or just venting. I mean, they're a parent, right? We value their that conversation. And I did. My dad and I were like best friends. I talked about everything with him. And that hit me hard in the face. And I just got extremely emotional because at first it was the reminder of your father is no longer here. And like that hit me like a ton of bricks, you know, because it was like I was looking at all my friends and I thought, you all can go call your parent. You all can have this conversation, but I can't, nor can I ever. And so at first it was very, very emotional. And I was, you know, working through just that memory of loss and pain and anguish because my father died a very cruel death through a terminal illness. And so I would just watch him wither away and die for, you know, for months and months. But then it just kind of took me down the lane of doing the work, like we said. And I stood up and I removed myself from this fireside chat and I went to the back of the yard and I just faced, it was pitch black, it was the middle of the night. And I just faced the sky, faced the backyard. I could barely even see the hand in front of my face. And I just started talking to myself. I was having these conversations with myself, with my dad that I never got to have and asking all these things of, you know, would you care what I'm doing? Would you be proud? Am I doing the right thing? Is this the wrong thing? And I remember going through all of this. I was probably talking to myself in this kind of experience, this mild trip, if you will, for probably 20, 30 minutes. And I remember getting to kind of the last of the questions and I just turned and I looked at this group of people I was with and I thought, like, how could he ever not be happy for me being this happy? Because that's been the only level of expectation I've had from him or my stepmom, my parents growing up my entire life is just like, Chase, show up, prepare, show up, give it your all, give, serve. And if you do that, there's no way you can ever fail. At least, you know, you might fail by some other person's standards or society standards, but like you will know, you can look yourself in the mirror and know that you are living your truth. You are a good person and you're giving it your all. And therefore, there's no failure in that. And that is the only expectation they had of me. And that is the only expectation they ever wanted me to have of myself. And for the first time ever, I just finally fully realized that. And I just started laughing. I was like, Dad, who knows? He might even be here with me. You know, he would wholeheartedly love seeing me in love. He would wholeheartedly love my life where I am right now and support that. And even if I did share with him, Dad, I'm on mushrooms, I'm doing drugs, you know, he would just be like, all right, you know, you're my son. I trust you. I know what you're doing. I know that you know what you're doing. And as long as, you know, all those expectations are met by yourself and for yourself, then like, you're good, man. And like, that was something that's been in my head for years and years and years and years since he died. But in that one night, on that one experience, I resolved that. And I've not once thought that ever again. It's been about a year.
How did that experience, asking those questions and being able to come to that conclusion, how did that impact your life and how you moved on the day-to-day basis moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who kind of has that question hanging over them, whether that's a spouse, a significant other, a loved one, you know, alive or dead, if you're just curious about, is what I'm doing, does it matter? And does it matter to the people that matter to me? Am I ashamed? Am I embarrassed? Am I scared to really share everything that is going on in my life with these people that matter most to me? That is lingering in the back of our minds, in the back of our hearts for a lot of us, for a lot of things. And I think whether we admit it or not, whether we realize it or not, whether it is a very conscious or subconscious thing, like it is there and it is a limiting factor on our potential. At least it was for me. I will say, I'm not one who, like, I don't really, other people's opinions don't influence or bother me really whatsoever anymore. Because I know I'm living in accordance with what I want for my life and the people that matter in my life and me, them. And all the other haters and trolls or, you know, whatever, like, I literally, it doesn't even faze me. But that, in the back of my mind of, what would my dad think? What would my family think? What would he think about all this? Was always kind of there. So in a way, it was like this subconscious kind of limiter on my own potential. And so ever since I resolved that, ever since I had that conversation that night in that yard, I have just been, I didn't know how much I was not letting myself go. I didn't know how full steam ahead I really could go. I thought I was giving it my all in so many things and in my businesses and in my relationships and in life. But until I fully let that go, I have just, like, I'm blowing my mind of the things that I'm accomplishing. I'm blowing my mind of the things that I'm able to get done. And just, it's like my engine had this governor on it that I didn't even realize. And it has been turned wide open and I'm like on turbo mode.
Like what?
Well, being so open about all this stuff, to be honest, is one. Talking, having these conversations about using psilocybin, MDMA, ketamine, using all of these things that are, you know, by our parents' standards, by a lot of society standards, you know, by corporate America standards, are wrong. I mean, yes, technically in some areas, in some states, you know, certain things are illegal, but we're moving away from a lot of that, you know, decriminalization, psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, supervised, you know, experiences like that, which I have had, legal experiences. And it's just, you know, I think for a lot of people that are having these similar revelations, there's also that governor on them of, I can't talk about this. I can't share this because it's wrong, or people think it's wrong. You know, what am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my relationship? Are my family members going to like shun me? But I have none of that. And I have had conversations with my family members, with my mom, my stepmom, about all of this. And I talk about it all the time on my social media and in my content. And it, I have zero reservations about talking about anything anymore that bring me joy, fulfillment, emotional healing. Plus, you know, I've had some of the most profound physical changes and improvements since using psychedelics in terms of biomarkers. And like, I share all that information. So, I mean, I have zero hesitation about talking about any of this to anybody anymore.
What's been the biomarker change that you've noticed in your own physical health?
So back in July, I used Whoop right here, this activity tracker band. I've been using it for over 2 years now. And in July of this year, July 2021, I started my first official microdose protocol. And it's a formula that includes a lot of different things, functional mushrooms, a B complex, shilajit, a lot of like supplements and things that I normally take on my own. But then it just has a microdose amount of psilocybin, 165 milligrams, 0.165 grams. And so I went on this protocol 2 days on, 1 day off for 1 month for 30 days. And I mean, so many of the benefits that I had, we've kind of touched on in terms of that elated state, you know, mild elated state, it's a microdose, but you know, changes in sensation, changes in mood, emotional and mental work. But my Whoop was showing me this quantitative data that I couldn't believe. Danny, I've been fitnessing my entire life, right? I'm a country boy. I grew up in the mountains running all over. I played baseball and sports. I was active duty army for 6 years right after high school. And then after that, I've trained. I've done some form of physical activity, exercise like 4 or 5 days a week, 3 to 5 days a week for the past 15, 16 years. I know what it is to train. I know what it is to diet and bodybuild and powerlift and CrossFit and yoga and all these things. And my biomarkers are good, but none of what I did ever came close to the biomarker gains, the quantitative gains that I had on psilocybin in that 1 month. My HRV increased 40% in less than 30 days. The highest HRV I ever had before, like my best of my best, was in the 60s maybe. Wow. Resting heart rate, usually, you know, I'd say like mid 60s, I drink caffeine. And then my respiratory rate was usually like, you know, mid 16s, maybe low 17. And, you know, depending on what I would do, my recovery rates overall would kind of fluctuate, but usually pretty good. Anybody out there in the world, you know, I was in the green most days, but usually it was like high yellows. In that 30 days on that psilocybin protocol, my HRV increased 40%. My resting heart rate dropped by, if memory serves, I think 3 to 5 beats per minute. My respiratory rate dropped by almost a full 0.5%. And everything else, my recovery rate, my sleep, my training, everything was so dialed in. And here's the best part, man. It has stayed that way. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just like, here's a medicine, here's a supplement, here's the psilocybin, and your body's going to change while on it. It has stayed at those new levels since coming off of it for months now. And so I haven't quite fully decided what I believe yet, because there's honestly, I have my personal experience and I'm looking still out of the science. I don't know yet what I believe, if psilocybin is the direct causation of these biomarker improvements, or is it that psilocybin unlocks the ability for us to heal on this mental and emotional level that frees us from so much trauma and baggage and weight and stress and anxiety that finally allows so much of our nervous system to relax. Part of me believes that there is a direct correlation and causation of psilocybin to these improved biomarkers, because of what we really see coming out of the science in terms of it being used to study for anxiety, PTSD, and stress. And what do we know what happens if you're living in a heightened stress state, and especially for so many people, myself included, who have PTSD, and you have to live through that daily. Like, you are in a constant, more or less, fight or flight. And when you're in that state of being, your central nervous system is just constantly on edge. Your cortisol is elevated. And well, if your cortisol is elevated all the time, most likely you're going to have reduced sleep health. You're going to have lower HRV, higher respiratory rate, higher resting heart rate, and you're just going to be more reactive. And so I do believe that the psilocybin had positive benefits on me in terms of those biomarkers, but also I know what happened for me in terms of the work and the emotional mental healing that I went through. And I literally felt so much just leave my body. And so I think those two kind of together are what really have allowed my body. Like, I'm at a whole new baseline, man. I'm at a whole new baseline. And it's not just like a placebo. It happened during that experience and it has stayed at those levels ever since.
Yeah, it sounds like a whole new Chase 2.0. And
I'm on like Chase 3.0 going into 4.0 at this point.
I love it. Yeah. And so how have those around you reacted to your increased openness, your increased ability to share, your level of comfortability with yourself increasing? How has that relationship with others, have they noticed? Have they been shocked? What's their reaction been like?
Shock is a fair word for most people that knew me before all of this. I was a very, I think straight edge is a very, it's a little bit of a too aggressive term, but I was very, very like, I have a nickname with my circle of friends. A lot of my friends, they call me Officer Tuning because I'm just like, this is right, this is wrong. Like, I'm that guy when we're crossing the street. I will not cross the street until it says, you know, the white hand, the white guy says go.
Would it make
go.
It like, in New York?
Seriously, like, I will stand there because no, it says don't go. So I'm going to wait. Like, and it's part of my upbringing. I grew up, you know, very religious household. I was in the military, like I said. So like, I have quite literally, up until I was about like 25, lived by rules. And I carried those rules with me. Black, white, yes, no, right, wrong, go, stop. And that's how I live my life because I thought like that got me by so far. And that's what I was taught. That's what I knew to be true. And so the people that know me, that have known me for a while, have been shocked the most. Just to hear me tell them that I'm doing drugs, I'm doing mushrooms, I was MDMA, ketamine, psilocybin, I'm using it and then talking about it, they're stunned. Like, whoa, Chase, you know, this is, quote, you know, this is wrong, right? This is blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, I don't care because it has changed my life. And in that first experience, my very first ever psychedelic use experience was with MDMA. And long story short, it basically, I had my first ego death in a very kind of mild way. And it showed me something in my relationship with my wife that has been this on again, off again, kind of just dumb argument all on me. And in an instant, I realized how dumb it was. And I realized what was really going on. And I realized that I was just mad about something that I wasn't getting in my life from my own family that like she had with hers. And it came up as this, like, we're not going to do that because I can't have it with my family kind of thing. And I just started weeping. I started crying and I apologized to her. And I was like, I realized where like, this hasn't been a thing with us. It's been a thing with me. And that moment, that night, it died and it's never come up again. It's been over a year. And so I say that to kind of just paint even more of a backstory. So the people that really know me were, you know, your word was great, shocked. And then so many people, I mean, because I've been doing the whole social media game for a while now. And people, I've been getting DMs out of the woodwork, emails like crazy. People, like in the beginning, before I think I was very public about it, were just like, Chase, you look different. You're acting different. Like you, I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy, but I remember getting so many messages about like, you just seem so happy. And I would tell them, and you know, that's kind of been my thing, you know, on social media and in my health and wellness journey is everything that I experience, the good, bad, and the ugly, I share almost to a fault sometimes, you know, hey, I'm loving this workout. Here's what it is. Hey, I'm trying this diet. Here's what it is. Hey, I'm trying this drug. Here's what it is. Here's this supplement. And so once I began to just be an open book, it was like, I was, what's the term? Like a whistleblower. And so many people, not to like play lightly on something that was very serious, but you know, like the Me Too movement, it was like that. But for this, I say it was like Me Too, but for like emotional and mental healing, for really talking about the things that are the pains of our heart and the traumas of our life, I was just blatantly word vomiting, heart vomiting about all these things. And everyone was just floored. And Danny, nothing I have ever talked about on Instagram or on my podcast in 5+ years now, nothing, quite literally nothing, has come close to the interest and the, you know, quote, me too, as this mental health approach using psychedelics. In terms of people actually saying, yes, me too, like I'm using it for this purpose and it's helping me, or, hey, can you tell me more about what you're using and how? Because the results you're getting for your PTSD, the results you're getting for your biomarkers, I have been struggling with my health, my mental health with this stuff for years and nothing is working, but I've been following you for a month, for 5 years, and I trust you. And that is what's been blowing my mind the most. And what I take the most seriously is I get that comment the most of, Chase, because it's you, because you're the one talking about it. You have never steered me wrong before. You have been this open book for you know, a month, for a year, for however long people are in my audience. And it's because it's coming from you, I'm actually considering it, or I'm finally going back to therapy or starting therapy for the first time, or I'm going, you know, maybe in my city here, wherever they're from, you know, I have the access to psychedelic assisted psychotherapy, or, you know, recreational MDMA, psilocybin, whatever. And so it's just this kind of Pandora's box of healing and help that I've never experienced before.
It's incredible. What happened with the PTSD? How did your relationship with psychedelics impact how you felt about post-traumatic stress disorder?
So for me, my diagnosed PTSD stems from predominantly from the loss of my father. Like I was sharing with you earlier, he had a very, very aggressive diagnosis of Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS. His time from diagnosis to when he passed was very short. It was about 17, 18 months, if memory serves. And he withered away and died in one of the most cruel ways you could ever imagine a human to have to die. And I was thousands of miles away at the time. I had just joined the Army. I was all over the world. And I wanted nothing more than to be with my father and my family. But I won't say he talked me out of it. He just presented where he presented his comfort and his acceptance of where he was about to die in a way that allowed me to make the decision to stay on my path and to stay in the military and to just trust him that he didn't want that for me. But my decision was ultimately my own. So for me, it was every time I would come home or get a letter or a phone call or picture or whatever, it was just watching my hero, my best friend, just like, it was like being tortured almost. And so for me, I had a lot to work through with that, that ultimately gave me a lot of negative thoughts and very poor mental health that, like, I'm kind of going all over the place here, but it all makes sense, I promise. Right after he died, because of where I was and, you know, mentally, was I basically a volunteer for a deployment, and in pursuit of that deployment during war game training, like I was doing all this because I wanted to die. Like I didn't care if I lived or died anymore. And I wanted to just come home in a box wrapped in a flag like my father and be buried like he was. And then this amazing new $400,000 life insurance policy they just up to in the military would go to my family. And I thought that would take care of them. And so I was giving up on life. And so I quite literally wanted to just go out in a blaze of glory. And in pursuit of that, God, the universe, whatever, decided that was not in my plans. And so I suffered career-ending injuries during those war games that ultimately the last year and a half almost of my military career, I was a patient, just, you know, in and out of the hospital. I had bilateral reconstructive hip surgeries. You know, both my femurs have been removed from my body, reshaped, put back in. I've got rods and pins in there. And so I had to learn how to walk again. And so all of that, on top of the death of my father, like imprinted this like 2-year experience in my life as just nothing but trauma, physical, mental, emotional, spiritual. And I stuffed it down for the better part of a decade. And then through therapy and opening up finally to trusted people in my life, it began to get better and better and better. But it was only until using psychedelics did I really like address it. And I say it addressed me, but in the most like comforting way you could ever imagine. It's like going back to the scene of a crime, a murder scene of your entire family, but just wrapped in a hug at the same time. That's a very, very weird, interesting analogy, but it brought me to the heart, to the crime scene of all of those things that I sort of kind of worked on and other things that I didn't, in just the most comforting way, so that I finally could really look at them and just understand them more finally and just to begin to let things go. My intention going in, particularly, I underwent several rounds of ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, was for my PTSD, for all of this, because I really feel like I am choosing now, 17 years later, I want to move into the acceptance phase of grief, which has been one of the hardest things for me to say and to process, is because who wants to let go of their loved one? Who wants to be like, I'm totally fine. It's cool. It's cool that he died. It's totally cool. Who wants to say that or admit that? But I recognize that it is important. It is a very important phase for my healing and for me to truly move forward and onward with my life in the way that my father would want for me and the way that I want for me, is I need to get into acceptance of this, and I haven't. And it's taken me 17 years. So through this psychotherapy and then ketamine sessions, I got there, man. I won't say that I'm fully like, yeah, we're good, we're done, it's cool. But it has helped me skip to the front of line again with this work. And so it has gotten me to a place with my PTSD and the loss of my father and revisiting quite literally my physical traumas and visiting things that I didn't even know left that big of an imprint. And like, you know, you were kind of saying earlier people in my life that are no longer here. A few of my closest relationships, my brothers, guys that I served with that, you know, didn't make it out alive, that ultimately transitioning back into civilian life after our time in the military was too much for them. They didn't have the support that they needed or could get, and they took their own lives. And like, it was like losing two other brothers that I never even fully processed. And I've revisited them during these ketamine experiences. I've revisited every person in my life that's been a part of my journey, alive or past. And it's helped me finally process these things in a way that feels so safe. And, you know, it's like coming home, you know?
It's really powerful. What do you think you would say to yourself 10 years ago to get closer to a level of acceptance?
Yeah, to myself 10 years ago, to myself, hell, now 15 years ago, 17 years ago, really like when 19 years ago, the moment that I found out that my father was dying, because that's when it all kind of began for me. I would tell myself, no matter what it is, no matter how painful or no matter how joyful or anywhere and anything in between that spectrum of emotion, give yourself permission to feel it and to feel it fully. Feel how happy you are that you are on this new career path. Feel how happy you are that you are walking again. Feel how happy you are that you are beginning this new endeavor in your life, separating the military. Be miserable, be in pain, be in sorrow, be in grief. So much of what I went through, and I think a lot of us go through, anytime it's not anything other than sunshine and rainbows or happiness or success, we don't allow ourselves to fully feel that because we feel, we think, or people tell us, society tells us that we're not allowed to. There's no time for that. Stuff it down. Men don't cry. Girls don't cry. We don't talk about this stuff in this family. emotions, tears, sorrow is weakness, all this stuff. And I do believe there's a time and place for everything, but make time and make a place for everything, because it will rear its head again in your life. The body keeps the score, right? And I remember when it began to rear its ugly head for me, about 10 years after he passed away, through severe panic attacks, anxiety attacks, through driving off the road because I would hear a song that my father and I used to like jam out to, and I would just be completely transported back in time to not being able to go to a movie theater and sit through a movie where there was a death scene or somebody even said the word terminal or cancer, or I would see somebody die, and like having to literally be shaken awoke out of like a seizure like panic attack by friends and family and loved ones while watching a movie on the couch because there was a death scene. It will show up in your life, and it may not be as obvious as, you know, major panic attacks or things like that for me or for a lot of other people, PTSD. It might be poor immune system. It might be a rash, skin irritation. It might be poor gut health. There 100% is a link between what we experience in life and what we go through physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. We are more than just a one-dimensional being, and you're a fool to think that you can just approach your health and your wellness and your healing in one dimension as well. We can trick ourselves for a while, but I promise you it will catch up. And so I know it's a long-winded way to say, basically, I would tell myself, Chase, this is future Chase giving you permission to just feel everything.
The feeling of grief and the deep feeling of grief comes because we love the person, right? Because there's such a deep love. And that was the first thing that to pop out into my mind. And what would you say to people who believe that society has gotten soft, right? You're talking about your feelings, your emotions, your trauma, and I resonate with you 100%. I know it's real. I know it's truth. But there are some people who believe society's getting soft. We shouldn't talk about these things. What would you say to that person?
I would say to that person, do some psychedelics. see a therapist. But, you know, that's kind of a tricky question for me to answer because there's so much in my life that I've shared with you so far. You know, I've been a lot of different things, and I've been and still am a lot of these things. You know, I'm the oldest brother, I'm the oldest of three. So I'm the leader of my kind of, you know, next generation pack. I'm a son, I'm a brother, I'm a son-in-law, I'm a soldier, I'm a leader, I'm a manager, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a podcaster, I'm a human, all of these things. And when we put on these hats, when we step into these roles, or, you know, society or culture or, you know, your job or your family puts these hats on you in some instances, and more instances than us putting them on, I think, it's this thought that this is forever. That once this hat goes on, it can't come off. And so I say that, and I hope I'm answering your question, is because sometimes we need to just like, not now. I can't deal with this now. I need to stuff it down, or I need to compartmentalize. And, you know, I devote a lot of that to kind of, you know, my military Chase. You know, that's the warrior mindset of, it's not saying that what you're feeling, what you're going through, your response to this sensation or emotion is wrong, and that it's invalid or not warranted or not wanted, but it's just, we need to get there at another time because there's something more important right now, or there's something that is more of a priority or a timely manner, timely fashion. You know, my military people, you know, it's the mission comes first. You got to accomplish that mission. And then unfortunately you're going to come back afterwards and clean up the casualties, and you're going to assess the damage, and you're going to go through that report, and you're going to do your after action review and figure out what went right, what went wrong, and what you can do better next time. So you need to sometimes cross that finish line before you can, you know, put band-aids on anything that happened along the way. But recognizing what happened along the way is crucial. So it's noting things and then making sure you're getting to them instead of just noting things and then ignoring them or ignoring things right out of the gate, you know? So I say to that, I mean, I think there's a time and a place for everything. And I think ultimately if we go back to what I said before this of giving ourselves permission and even the grace to feel what we feel, I think we will pretty quickly come to a conclusion of when is appropriate to deal with this or how is it appropriate to deal with this or with whom versus never with nobody, keep it all to yourself kind of thing. You know, there's a lot going on, I think, the last couple of years of this kind of new wave of masculinity and, you know, this new age man. I feel like I personally see a lot of kind of duality here of men are getting soft and we need to toughen up. We need to man up, quit being a little bitch. You know, we need to grow a pair versus, you know, a lot of people are like, no, like be soft, be okay, be gentle, tap in more to the feminine energy. And I personally think both are right. It's just, they can't be right all the time. That's, you know, again, like I said earlier, we're not one-dimensional beings. I'm not a one-dimensional man. People aren't one-dimensional women or non-binary or, you know, human beings. We are a lot of things. And so the more we can let those things be when they need to be, I feel confident in our ability on our own or at least in a community to come together and decide when we need to work on this stuff and the appropriate course of action. It's not that this never needs to happen or never needs to be addressed because that doesn't solve anything.
You know what I love about you, Chase, is you represent an ethos that I've been thinking a lot about for the past 2 years, which is the warrior monk. And I think in the past year, it sounds like you've really tapped into your monk side. And we spent a lot of this conversation about the monk going inward, tackling the trauma, figuring that out. But I want to talk about the warrior aspect of you as well. Because I think the warrior part of you gave you the discipline needed to look a hard problem in the face and tackle it mentally. And so talk to me about the warrior aspect of you, the importance of discipline, the importance of being a strong man, and how that has played a role in you waking up.
I give a lot of credit, and I agree a lot with what you said there, of the warrior version of me, the warrior phase of me as a human being, the warrior man kind of being developed first so that it provides a lot of that structure and discipline and knowledge and wherewithal of when I need to be a warrior and when I don't. Because being in a warrior mentality, and it's been a while since I've read this, but probably the first book I ever read that kind of opened up my eyes to more of the quote work beyond just the physical self, you know, strength training, gym, was it's this book called King, Warrior, Magician, Lover. And it's like the four archetypes of man. And it opened up my eyes to like how, like I was saying earlier, like how necessary so many versions of ourselves there are, but like to stay in those versions forever or for even beyond their necessary time is what I think does us the most disservice. And a lot of times we don't even fully realize it. It's because, well, I was trained to be the warrior. I was brought up in the warrior household. So I'm a warrior, or, you know, I'm the monk, or I'm the whoever. And that's the hardest part to kind of separate from initially. It's just because how we were raised, our environment, the people around us, and the future goals and accomplishments bestowed upon us, or even that we created ourselves, are only because of where we were, what we were doing, and what we perceived to be the natural course of action. And for me, a lot of that was the warrior. My father was in the army. Every tuning, every generation, my family has served like forever. Like we traced it back to the Civil War, if not even more. And so I give a lot of credit to that in the beginning because it did give me I mean, being a warrior, being a soldier, being in the military, you know, being a firefighter, first responder, that warrior mentality, it takes discipline. It takes a lot of things that are more of the hard side of life, the hard side of living and, you know, accomplishments. And I'm very grateful for that because I think it has showed me really, really when I need to turn it on and off. And to what I say, I really kind of, this last year has definitely been like the monk phase for sure. And, I'm going to give credit to a friend of mine who I met last year. She's a medium, actually. Shout out Nicole, the medium, who, I guess you could call it a reading. She, just kind of shared with me. She's like, it was my, right before my birthday. And she's like, you're going into your heart phase.
Wow.
And this last year absolutely has been, I would say, my heart phase, or, you know, you quoted there, the monk kind of phase. And now I think it's been a very necessary phase because it's one of the components that makes up the ultimate archetype there of the man in that book, and that's the king. And a king embodies all of these versions of himself, warrior, magician, lover. And a king knows and strives for peace at all times, within his own self, his household, his dominion, and everything that he has dominion over. And he knows when he needs to become another version of himself. And it's not, I don't even want to say like knows when to become another version of himself, but when to just turn on a version of himself that is already there, but is not necessary. And I think the same thing applies, you know, to, you know, male, female, however you define yourself there. We all have these attributes. I think there are innate human attributes of go, 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 you know, the tip of the spear, go, 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 attack, or stay home, retreat, chill, love, engage with others, creativity, all the ranges of human emotion and things that we need and want. But it's just, we don't have to stay married to them. It's just an understanding that if we can fully understand them and respect them, we know when and where and how to apply them.
Yeah, I like that. That makes a lot of sense. How do you make sure you don't lose the warrior when you go into the monk phase?
You got to stay training, man. You got to stay ready. I mean, that's a part of it. You know, all of these things I just described, it's not like you accomplish one, you become one, and then you accomplish it, and then you're good, and then you go on to the next one, and then it just stays at the ready. You know, you have to, what's the phrase? Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. That's why, you know, in the military, we were always training. Because, I mean, I served during a time of war, but even during peacetime, in all branches of the service, you train. You go to the desert, you go to the swamp, you go to the sky, the sea, the land, you do all of these things as if you are in worst case scenario. Because just because you're not there right now in real life, what happens when you need to get there at the drop of a hat at a moment's notice? You need to have these skills developed and ready. And so we would train all the time, and I still train all the time now. I mean, I'm not out in the field days on end anymore, or in my body armor or rucking or at the range. I would like to get back to the range, but you know, I'm disciplined in the practices of my life that serve my life and that I feel I want and need to keep in my life, like reading, like sleep, like physical exercise, really, really aggressive, high intensity exercise, but then also very, very light, you know, aware of the full spectrum of the human body and training that appropriately and regularly. So whenever I need to tap into that version, when I need to be aggressive, when I need to just buckle down and do the work, whether that is moving some heavy ass weight in the gym, I still love to kind of power lift train that style, or that's, I need to buckle down and just like, I got a shit ton of work to do at work here today. I got things to accomplish, or recognizing when I need to take a breath and I need to slow down and I need to get outside and I need to call my mom. I need to take a walk with my dog and I need to have a date night with my wife and I need to check in with my friends and my family. I need to check in with myself. It's making priorities of all the versions of ourselves, the king, the warrior, the magician, the lover, so that all versions of ourselves are ready at a moment's notice. And knowing when that moment is needed, like only we will know that. But I try to just discipline and keep ready all the versions of myself so that, you know, I don't get soft in any one of them.
It's beautiful. And so you mentioned social media before, and I'm curious how you've sort of awakened to a new version of yourself in this past year. And I'm curious how your relationship with social media has changed, if it has at all, in that time.
Yeah, I'll say, you got me thinking on that one. this last year especially, just because, I mean, so many things in the world have changed, and I've needed to be more attentive to my businesses. I'd say I've definitely shifted to more purely a creator and way, way, way less a consumer. You know, I'm a full-time podcaster, and I honestly don't listen to that many podcasts anymore. I'm listening to a few like psychedelic ones now, cause I'm, you know, tapping more into that. So when I become thirsty and curious about something new, I'll tap into it. But, I'm more choosy, I guess. I'm more intentional. I'm more specific with how I want to give of my time. And social media is great for a lot of things, for fun, for education, for meeting people, but it's also a time sucker. And I'm sure you can relate, man. How many times have we picked up our phone? Oh, let me just check something. And you're like, yo, it's been 30 minutes. Like, where the hell did 30 minutes go? I just went to like reply to a text message. Why am I on TikTok? It gets us, man. And so I'm much more intentional and specific with how I give of my time in that manner. And I block off, like I schedule scroll time. I schedule engagement time. Because if I don't, like it'll get me, kind of thing. So I create, I'm much more of a creator, and I put information out there and I share my experiences. And while it may look like, I mean, I am online a fair amount throughout the day. It's just, here's what I'm doing. Here's what's going on. Here's a piece of information. Here's a resource. Here's my kind of feedback, and then bye, kind of thing. And then with that, it has kind of really opened up. I think anybody who kind of pivots in social media, who goes from being maybe known for one type of thing or creating one type of thing to, wait, hold on, Chase, why did you go from vlogs and fitness videos to talking about mushroom trips? You're going to lose some people. So, I mean, I've definitely, my audience has changed over the years, but I will honestly say, man, I really do think that I have been actively sharing my life in one way or another online since about 2014. So it's like 7 years now. Wow. I do think a majority of my people have stayed with me. And this is my kind of interpretation, not theirs. I'd have to poll, you know, tens of thousands of people. But I think it's because I've always kind of stayed true to, this is what I'm experiencing in life. This is what I love. This is what I'm afraid of. This is the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm sharing all of that. Definitely more so lately, since kind of, you know, especially the last 5 years being, you know, self-employed. And I think people really, really appreciate that. And I damn sure know that I do, because I want to be involved with somebody else's life. I want to watch, I want to spectate, I want to engage with people that are living and or in pursuit of living their truest, authentic version of themselves, their truth, because that passively is going to empower me to do the same. And I know that's true in my audience, because that's some of the most amazing feedback that I get. Like I was sharing with you earlier, of like people DMing me now for the first time, like, Chase, I'm an OG subscriber on YouTube since 2013, when you, like I said, doing fitness vlogs and all this, my words, dumb shit, you know, things that don't really matter. But I've never messaged you. I've never reached out until now. And it took my 5, 6, 7 years of this journey for them to finally, you know, feel comfortable enough to reach out and do this and stuff. And like, that's the most meaningful thing in the world for me. And that's where I think my kind of platforms are at this point.
Isn't that wild when somebody has been following your journey for a long, long time and they just message you for the first time after 7 years? Like,
yeah, I'm like, cool, nice to meet you. But also, yo, where the hell have you been?
And like, this is a point.
Throw me a comment every once in a while.
I think that's the thing that the consumer might not realize, is like a creator feeds off the connection with people. And it's totally understandable if you've just been a consumer of people, that understanding that for a lot of people, the oxygen is someone saying, I really resonated with this. And
yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's just an important point on the whole creator consumer thing is like, we love it when people engage. We love it. The fact that you made it to this point in the episode, like it means the world to me.
Yeah.
But we also want to hear about it. We want to know that it impacted you because that's why we do it, right?
So true, man. So true. I mean, and I think in the beginning, I'll say at least for me, it's kind of a vanity metric. You know, you say if you made it this far in the episode, like to get that level of engagement, that duration, it's great. If we can get 60, 80% content consumption engagement, you know, rate, like that's amazing. It's a great vanity metric in the beginning. But when that number on a screen goes to a handle, goes to a name, goes to a message, goes to a conversation, it is no bullshit. It is why we do this. And so many times I'll reply back to a message and their reply to that will be, oh, wow, I didn't think you'd see this. I didn't think you would reply and or whatever. And it's like, yeah, of course. Like I always say so many times when I'm messaging new people is I try to be social on social media. I think we've kind of lost that concept. You know, it's called social media. Let's be social. Let's socialize. And also I'd say it's kind of a way for me to, like I said earlier, what other people think of me doesn't influence my life. My kind of inner compass does, but when I do hear people share their experiences, it does give me feedback to know that like Chase, what I'm doing, like what you're doing matters for other people. So it does help kind of make it a more than about me kind of thing, because I'm on this journey. I'm committed to me for me. I just so happen to share it with the world. And when that impacts other people, and especially when they can share that impact with me, it's an amazing mirror. It's an amazing kind of like affirmation of, yeah, Chase, what you're doing is great and helping your life, but wow, like you got this great community along the way.
How much of you sharing yourself to the world via your podcast and social media do you think is because you want? How much of it is ego versus how much of it is heart?
Definitely now, and especially where I'm going in 2022. 2022 is going to see some decent shifts in terms of what my content literally looks like and sounds like, even in like the frequency. So that is definitely going to be much more of a heart, and that is going to be much more of a, this is what I want to create because this is the direction of my life, and not in like a selfish way, but just really how much more on fire are we when we are talking about doing, sharing experiences, people, places, things in our life that profoundly impact our life versus when we're just trying to attach ourselves to the next big name or a trend or whatever. And looking back, I can honestly say that, especially in the beginning of my like social media development days and podcasts, it was like, I know I can talk to anybody and I know we can have a great conversation and I know, you know, it will be a good, honorable, ethical piece of content, but it's like, yo, how many followers you got? You know, who's the next best New York Times bestselling author or influencer? I mean, and it's been great because, I mean, look, especially once it became a business for me, once I left my job and like the podcast kind of became my thing and social media became my thing, I had to be a little bit more discerning. I had to really kind of look at, all right, what value can I create through this experience, through this piece of content? But also like, I need some kind of ROI. Like, is this going to get me a sponsor? Is this going to get me more social? Is this going to get me more downloads? Like you have to kind of respect that. But now totally through gratitude of how my content and platforms have been received, I have like, you know, they say like you're 1,000 true fans, right? If you got 1,000 raving fans, 1,000 true fans, you're perennial, you're forever. And I'm so grateful for the people that have been with me on this journey that have allowed me to get to this point to now step fully into a heart phase because they're there with me that I'm good. I can just take those people and run with it because I know they're going to go with me, you know, forever. And that's been the journey for me.
Well, consider me part of that tribe because I appreciate all the energy you put out and the way you go about putting it out there. And I'm grateful you were so willing to share your story here today. Do you have any final pieces of closing words about, let's say we are in a locker room and the people listening and me, we're rallying around you for we're about to take the field. What are you saying to us to inspire us to live our best selves?
I'm gonna say something that's been a relatively new mantra of mine. And anybody who knows me is, you know, I've got, you know, Everford. Everford's been my thing for a long time, and it still is and always will be. But that's taken on kind of a new meaning for me over this last year. And a phrase that I've been thinking and sharing and saying and believe a lot in is, you are exactly where you are supposed to be. And so if we're there, we're huddled around, we're about to storm the field, take the hill, it's, you know, at first glance, it's kind of like, what? Like, what do you mean? Like, why am I supposed to be here? Why am I supposed to be in this shit show? Why am I supposed to be, you know, at the bottom of this hill? Why am I supposed to lead this attack? Why am I supposed to do this, whatever? But if you think about it and own in its entirety that where you are right now, quite literally, like where your feet are, whether you are comfortable or you are miserable, if you are happy or sad, you're killing it, or you are wondering how you're going to pay rent today. If you just allow that to be true, that you are exactly where you're supposed to be, it will show you the gratitude you need for the things that you have, the successes that you do have, and it will show you the lesson that maybe you're blind to or you don't think is there in the shit show that is your life and the uncertainty that is your life. So I will say, you are exactly where you are supposed to be, and allow that to be your truth right here, right now, today, and just keep applying that lesson, because moving ever forward in life, pursuing our dreams and our goals and everything we want in life all lives right here, right now, in the present. And if we can be grateful and learn the lesson for where we are right now, like, eternity lives in the present moment. And that is where I'm at these days, man.
13.8 billion years got us to this moment right here. Of course, it's exactly where we're supposed to be. Beautiful, beautiful words,
yeah,
Chase.
Yeah.
Where can people connect with you further?
Yeah, man. So I'm either on one of two places, on Instagram at Chase_tuning. Or this is my baby right here, Everforward Radio. It's a podcast, all things health, wellness, personal development. I say there are kind of three main columns there: fitness, nutrition, mindset. So, and definitely soon, more psychedelic conversations. But yeah.
Can't wait to hear all those. Thank you, Chase, for your time. I really appreciate it.
Danny, thank you, man.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Chase Tuning. If you have any thoughts about this episode or any of the episodes I've recorded, let me know on Twitter at @HeyDannyMiranda. I'm extremely grateful you made it to this point in the episode, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your day or night, and I will see you in the next episode. Peace.